Welcome to Answering the Call with host Elizabeth Ficicello. In this program, Elizabeth gives us a glimpse into the spiritual journeys of priests, deacons, and religious sisters and brothers from the Columbus Diocese who have heard and answered God's call. And here's your host, Elizabeth Ficicello.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820, and streaming live on stgabrielradio.com. I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli, and my guest today is someone you're probably familiar with. He is Father Leo Padelinghug, an internationally renowned conference speaker, author, TV host, radio contributor, and the founder of the Grace Before Meals movement and apostolate. And our Diocese of Columbus was blessed to have Father Leo speak at both the Columbus Catholic Women's Conference and more recently at a retreat for married couples held at St. Agatha's in Columbus. And I ran into him at both places, and he graciously agreed to be on the program today. So, Father Leo, I know you're a busy man, but it's great to catch up with you. Welcome to the program.
Oh, well, my pleasure. And while we're all busy, I'm no different from anybody else. It's a pleasure to take time and just kind of renew, you know, friendships and to encourage your listeners to live a good life.
Amen. You know, we're going to be touching on all the various parts of a very exciting and high-profile ministry that God has called you into. But first, I want to look at Leo Padelinghug, the early years.
Okay, well, first of all, congratulations on saying my name literally perfectly. Thank you for that. And that Leo Padelinghug, the early years, well, it all began in my mother's womb.
Well, you know, since this is a show about hearing God's call and answering it, that's kind of how I like to look at it, starting in the foundation that maybe your family gave you, it in faith, sure. It in family, and of course in food, because that's so critical to your ministry today. But for starters, I know you were born in the Philippines, but you really moved to the United States as a baby or as a very youngster, isn't that correct?
Yeah, I was just only a couple months under two, and I'm the youngest of four children. There were actually five. One died before me, but I still count him. So My family had a very simple upbringing. Although my father was a physician and my mother was a school teacher, she elected to stay home. And it was there that, you know, my earliest memories are of my mom cooking, of my mom teaching us how to pray, my dad working very hard, but at the same time, you know, this is kind of an interesting question, Elizabeth. My dad, while he was a physician, we lived very simply, and I just recently discovered about 5 or 6 years ago that he never worked a full day in his life.
Really?
He worked very hard, but he took time off so that he could spend time with his family in the afternoon. We had lunch together, and he would, you know, it was our Philippine tradition to spend time with his children, and he took a nap with us. You know, and then he would go back to the office around 3, and then he would work to 7, and then we would have dinner. And so I asked him about that, and he said, well, it's because my family was more important than work.
Wow.
And it was just a real shocker for me that the reason why our family is so close is because my dad did not put work before his family.
Wow.
He put it alongside of it because he knew his vocation was to take care of his family and obviously to use his education that he received. But he also, you know, he made sure that one did not replace the other. He was always home for lunches. He was always home for dinners. And that really helped.
Talk a little bit about the Catholic traditions maybe you had growing up in your household.
Yeah, well, we went to church every day. My mother's objective was, again, unlike a lot of physicians who lived in a bigger area, bigger homes and such, my mother insisted that we live close to the church. She just, that was a mandate. She needed to be able to walk to church. And so we lived only 3 blocks one way, and then we moved. When we moved on up to the east side, as the Jeffersons did, we moved just 3 blocks the other way. So it was still very walkable to get to the church. My father was a convert to Catholicism. He was actually raised Baptist, but his mother was Catholic, so he had kind of like a dual upbringing. He converted to Catholicism in order to study medicine at Santo Tomas University in Cebu, and my mother is the one who kind of converted his heart. Mm-hmm. So while we were raised Catholic, my dad still had a lot of his Baptist Protestant zeal.
Okay.
And so we grew up with, I would say, the best of both worlds.
Did you go to parochial school or public school in Maryland?
Oh, yeah. Parochial school the entire time. And it's unfortunate that that school is now closed just to changing demographics in the area. And the church is no longer as viable as it was when I was a kid. And, you know, growing up, being an altar server. And, you know, Elizabeth, to be honest with you, I didn't really want to be an altar server for the right reasons. It's just because they went to the amusement park at the end of the year. So I signed up for that reason. But I went to high school, Catholic high school, and then I went to a secular college because I had a scholarship that that paid my way.
Did you have any priests or sisters in your schooling, in your Catholic schooling, that had, you know, any impact on you in your faith?
To be honest with you, no. I hate to say it. It was at the time when, while the school had some religious affiliation, they were not as strong. Mm-hmm. And so I had one that kind of made an impression, a good one generally, but really there was a nun in my family, and there was a quote-unquote uncle priest who was in my family as well. And so my experiences of religious upbringing was really more domestic, and yet my mother always taught us to really respect the clergy and the consecrated life. And so whenever I did see them, I had great admiration for them, even if I had very little contact with them. I kind of looked at them admiringly from afar.
Okay. Now, you had a lot of interests growing up, Father. You and a lot of them were pretty physical. For example, you co-founded a martial arts school in 1988 with your brother. And I was trying to do the math and figuring you had been like a teenager. I mean,
yeah, I was really a teenager. I was a young adult. I was 17, 18 years old at the time that we got the school running. I've been a very active individual, there's no doubt. I could start my own club.
Yeah. Well, with that, I mean, you're under third degree black belt in Taekwondo. You would become a championship title holder in stick fighting. So this was more than just a hobby. I mean, this was a fairly substantial part of your life at that time.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, I mean, everybody needs a sport. I'm too short to play basketball, and so and soccer. You know, I'd rather kick a person than a ball. So it was just it was the thing that I did to maintain athleticism. But we also were very involved in cultural Filipino folk dancing, and because you know my teen years were in the 80s, I also choreographed for a breakdancing group. But during college, my brother started a school, and I came on board to help him as his chief instructor and program coordinator for the school, which is, you know, one of the oldest martial arts institutions, longest lasting in the state of Maryland. It's still going on strong.
Wow.
And I was also helping out with youth ministry, music ministry, teaching a high school speech and debate program, and also working in a law firm's property management team. So I was pretty busy in college.
Yeah, sounds like it. How would you say, as you look back on those physical accomplishments, the martial arts, the breakdancing, how would that come to play into what you're doing today?
Well, I would say discipline and rhythm, as well as flexibility and grace. All of those things that require someone to be good at anything so physical as dancing or martial arts, it requires someone to be very disciplined. You have to be in tune. You have to be, I think, humble enough to learn and, how shall I say, confident enough to get out there and do it.
Mm.
You know, and I think our church needs more confidence. I think that we're good at the humility, but it kind of becomes a false humility because we hide our gifts and talents under a rock. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, when I taught at the seminary, it was very challenging for a guy to accept he had many talents, and even more challenging to tell him, how are you going to use it? Because he knows that, and we believe this too, in our just regular life, if you show your gifts, you become a bigger target, and people have more of an opportunity to make fun of you.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking with international renowned priest, cook, author, television host, Father Leo Padalinghug here on Answering the Call, and he's sharing about his journey into the priesthood and his current varied ministries. So, Father, when is it that you had the first inkling that you might be called to the Catholic priesthood?
Well, I think in eighth grade, we had an opportunity during Lent to go to Mass every day, and while that was kind of a challenging thing for me to do. It really was a great thing for me to do. Again, my motives weren't 100% clear. It just meant that I could sleep in just a little bit later because the rest of the kids had to report at a certain time. And if you went to Mass, you could go to Mass and then you could show up a little bit later. So that was my reasons. However, it was there that, you know, I don't want to say fake it till you make it, but I started to pay attention to what the priest was saying. And I certainly felt an appreciation for him and his ministry. But really, the ultimate, breakdown in tears and realize that God was calling me to the priesthood was over a period of years when I was not only discovering my own sinfulness, because I was recognizing that God was real, I was also discovering more about the Catholic Church, because I was questioning life, I was questioning reality of God. I was a philosopher, at least in my own mind, I thought I was, because I had a couple years of college, and so I was smarter than anybody else. And therefore, I started to ask very deep questions. And I was asking at least sincerely, and I was willing to at least ask the Catholic Church about some things. So that got me to at least a more tangible relationship. You know, while I was willing to question my faith, I was also willing to listen to the answers.
Yeah.
But that didn't mean that I was just going to the Catholic Church. I was investigating everywhere. And it was just when I came to realize God is real, the Eucharist is real, the Church isn't making this stuff up just to make us miserable in the pews. There's a reason for everything. And it really came about when a missionary preacher challenged us to learn a little bit more of our faith. If not, he said, then just go home.
Right.
You know, you don't need to be here.
Right.
And so I took that very seriously. And he said, if you're coming to church, you don't know why, come to at least one of these mission nights. And if you don't want to go to church after that, you don't have to go. And he was that confident in his teaching. And I just said to myself and my mother, I'm going to the mission.
And speaking of your mother, I hear you had an interesting way to break the news to your mom that you were thinking about becoming a priest. It was around Halloween time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good research there. I dressed up as a priest one day. and that's actually, that's not when I broke it to her, but that was actually a time when I was starting to come to grips with maybe God is calling me to be a priest. I dressed up as a priest for Halloween. The problem was I was trying to be a mummy instead because I had a cast on my leg, and I just thought that this would work better. And I had a black shirt on, and I was making it around my neck. I just said, you know, the thought came to me, let me just turn this into a collar and see what happens.
Let's talk now about the cooking. And, you know, growing up in that Filipino family, I know food was a big part of that, and you're probably exposed to cooking there. But your real love for cooking would come kind of to the front burner. That's a little culinary humor, Father. Hope the audience did too. But it would really come to the front burner at the North American College in Rome.
Correct. So I was assigned there by Archbishop Keeler, Cardinal Keeler now, and he was very keen on making sure that I did not limit my education just to academics. But he also said, just through the experiences, and he kind of even listed some of them. And at the time, Cardinal Dolan was Monsignor Dolan, the rector at the North American College. And it is the tradition, not just of the college, but it's even the tradition of, you know, Cardinal Dolan's own family to have a regular family meal. And I had been very homesick, even though I had spent some time away from my family. So I was a big boy at the time. I still missed my family. And the only thing that kind of consoled me was our regular meal times at the seminary. We were required to be there for lunch, known as pranzo, the more formal dinner, supper in America.
Okay.
And it was there that I just became a little bit more at home and at peace. And I started to kind of recognize how food has power. And then I also appreciated the Italian cuisine. I didn't want to go to Italy because I didn't like Italian food as it was presented to be in the American culture. And the Italian approach to food is so much different. And it was there that I gained a great respect for the technique of cooking, but then also in the seminary, a growing theological perspective.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to talk about that. But before that, you finished seminary in 1999 is when you were ordained, correct? At 29 years old?
That is correct.
Okay, so now you're back in the States, and you're a parish priest in Maryland, you know, in your diocese, in your archdiocese. And you would do what's very typical parish priest, be invited to dinner. But you would do something different when you'd go to people's houses for dinner.
Yeah, I'd show up early.
How interesting for a Catholic to show up early to anything.
Exactly, exactly. They would ask me to come at 7, or they said, you know, please come at 7. I'd show up at 6:30, and they would be just in the throes of trying to be perfect. And then I said, please, no. I came because I know you're not, and I came because I'm not either, and I came to help so that it's more of a family meal as opposed to something so, how shall I say, professional that we become less a family. So I wanted to at least let them know that I want to help set the table, and it really just, how shall I say, took the wind out of things that, and it made them breathe more naturally.
Mm-hmm.
It made them realize, oh gosh, well then you just want to help, then let's do it. Let's help. And I didn't care if their room was 100% ready or even slightly messy. It was just, if we're going to get to know each other, then let's not put on any airs. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to be impressed, and I'm not here to impress you. I'm here to be a spiritual father. And guess what a father does? He helps. Because if he does not work, he does not eat. So says St. Paul to the people at Thessalonica.
So you would start cooking with them or for them. And is this,
sure.
So this was kind of the beginning, the genesis of Grace Before Meals?
That's it, really. It just became just what a priest does. However, Grace Before Meals really began after September the 11th, because 2 days later, September 11th, 2001, that is, I was supposed to go to France with a few priests, but mm-hmm. obviously all the flights were canceled, and we had very difficult work to do the weekend after in consoling just the hordes of people that came to church just looking for something. And we were very wiped out because we were ready for a vacation. Then we were thrown into the thick of counseling and spiritual direction, and which was fine. And it was actually the most powerful thing in my priesthood so far. But afterwards, some priests, we went out on a little retreat, and I did the cooking there because I have skill and they liked it, and I don't like to do dishes. So it was a perfect combination. And really, the idea came about from priests saying, you know, it would be great if, you know, there was a cooking show where a priest could kind of connect family and faith and food again, because it was just a way to maybe bring some consolation. It was actually inspired also by the Food Network, because they shut down their network and basically said, for the next few days, we just want to encourage families to go around the dinner table, especially in this time of tragedy. Mm. It was a very beautiful thing the Food Network did.
Mm-hmm. And then this idea would kind of really begin to take roots. You had a parishioner or something that produced TV shows and commercials for Comcast. Was that
it snowballed into a new parish assignment. The idea or the joke of Grace Before Meals was spreading rapidly amongst priests, and they all thought that it was a good idea and encouraged it. But I didn't think anything of it, because how do you make a TV show happen? Well, God had plans of, you know, putting me in touch with a producer who did documentary work, commercials for Comcast, and he said, let's do it. And even though I had much hesitancy, the long story short is we put it out there, and people loved it. They just love the idea of a priest reminding people through an entertaining way to come together around the dinner table to eat. And it was then, in like around 2003 or 2004, when we put it out, that it just grew and grew and grew to the point where we had to put a book out in 2007. And then that became more popular. People invited me to speaking events around the country. So we put out a website. The website grew. We put out videos. And that's what caught the Food Network's attention. In 2008, they contacted me to organize an event in 2009. And in 2009, the Food Network came, and that's when they put one show, just one show. And that was the surprise cooking competition known as Throwdown with Bobby Flay. And that really kicked it into the highest gear possible.
If you were to sum up the primary mission of Grace Before Meals, you know, is it to strengthen families and communities around the dinner table? Is that how you'd summarize it?
Yeah, really, that's it. It's you know, there are several quippy one bite ways of saying it, and you know, stronger families, better food is another way, feeding people body, mind, and soul. It's really cultivating a theology of food.
Well, that's the thing. There are so many wonderful parallels between food and family to our Catholic faith, which is really like the ultimate meal around the ultimate table.
Correct. And that's why the newest book that's coming out, and I just did the audio recording for it with Servant, Servant Books, coming out next year, probably around Lent, is called Epic Food Fight.
Oh, I love it.
A bite-sized history of salvation.
Huh.
And it will trace how food is used throughout all of salvation history. And I've actually been very pleased with it, with working with Servant Books. But as I was kind of reviewing the book's material, I was actually saying to myself, gosh, I got to remember this. And I just remembered, I wrote this thing. I should remember this thing. But it just reminded me in a more organized way how food has been present from the very first moment that God revealed himself to the last moment that he will call us to in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And food is part of every major transition from the prophets to the kings to covenants to obviously the coming of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and you know, God is someone who knows what he's doing, and obviously it's so important. And we see today in our modern culture the breakdown, what happens when we don't have these family meals. And unfortunately, I think the far majority of families don't have those regular family meals anymore because of sports or other activities. And I know there's a lot of sociological, you know, statistics that show what happens, you know, to this breakdown.
Sure. So that's where theology, the logic of Theo, God, interacts with biology, sociology, psychology. All of those different logics are connected to food as well. Food is primarily not only biological, it is a logical thing for human existence. Food affects your psyche, it affects your biology, it affects sociology. But we've almost kicked theology out when we're talking about food, and so I just try to make a stronger connection because God worked through all of those things, biology, psychology, sociology, using food in all of salvation history, from Old Testament, New Testament, the magisterial teaching,
mm-hmm.
and even now. So it's a pretty deep book presented in a fun way.
That sounds really great. And I want to give out those book titles again because I'm an author too, so I know how it is that we want to get our titles out there. You have Your Grace Before Meals, Recipe for Family Life. You have Spicing Up Married Life, Satisfying Couples, Hunger for True Love, and now this Epic Food Fight, which is coming out next year, which sounds like a great book in the series. And, you know, Father, since your throwdown with Bobby Flay on that Food Network back in 2009, I think that really, really propelled you into the national and now international spotlight. But you have so many things you're balancing. You're an international speaker. You've been on networks such as PBS and ABC and CBS. You do for EWTN a cooking show called Savoring Our Faith. You do a food column for the Catholic Review in Baltimore. You blog. I know for a time you were a professor doing priestly formation at Mount St. Mary's. How do you find the balance in all of this and still maintain your priesthood?
Well, I think it's just making sure that you're well-fed, body, mind, and soul. That's really it. In the book, I talk about intentional eating, and I have to be very intentional when it comes to eating food for my body, intentional about satisfying my, you know, my mind with food for thought, make sure that I'm filling my mind at least with positive and nurturing good things, and then also making sure that I feed my soul with that beautiful commandment to keep holy the Sabbath day of resting. So really, it is being rooted in God. God is part of everything that I do. And I also know that when age comes to when I get older, I have to slow things down, so I also have a spiritual director and good friends who kind of remind me maybe you need to slow down in some things. And, you know, that humble pie is a very bitter herb of truth to swallow. But that's why you have to surround yourself with people who are not going to just blow smoke up your cassock. They have to tell you the truth. They really do. And that's what a spiritual director is for. That's what a confessor is for. That is what good friends are for. And I think there's nothing more humbling than when you actually hear yourself on radio, because I have my radio show, too, on Sirius XM.
Oh, that's right.
Entertaining Truth. But hearing yourself on radio or watching you on TV, that's pretty humbling, because you just realize, gosh, you're not all that.
You know.
So I know who I am, and my family reminds me, I'm just that kid.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, I think one of the things that I love best about you, Father Leo, is that you show the world that priesthood doesn't have to be this joyless, somber existence, but you just really exude life and love of people and joy. And I think that is such an important message for all of us, but especially for our young.
Yeah, that's called coffee. The coffee gets me going. I just tweeted today that the coffee gets me started, the prayer keeps me going. And that honestly is true. And I know that that sounds so cliche, but you fill yourself up with bad things, it's just going to weigh you down.
Mm.
You just have to get rid of it. That's called confession, so that you can eat that meal again like the prodigal son and then be strengthened for that food, with that food for the journey. And you're right. I try to be joyful, but I'll tell you, Elizabeth, there are some days when I'm not all that much in a good mood. I'm just not always happy. And that's why I have to almost regroup, you know, because I think we have idolized priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look at St. John Vianney, I look at him more realistically than, say, for example, a first-year seminarian would. They would see the piety in him, and I see him getting cranky with people who were just kind of whining, you know? But he did it in a loving, priestly way. He did it in a way that says, who's not going through a hard time? Who's not? We're not supposed, just because you're faithful doesn't mean life is going to be perfect. Remember, folks, we're on a pilgrimage, and there are going to be days when we feast, and there are going to be days when we fast. And I think what we need to do is just be faithful, which means we will always be imperfect. But faithfulness means you get up and you try again.
That is really great words. Father Leo Padalinghug, our time is up. I knew it'd go fast. Can you just leave us with a blessing?
Yeah, may Almighty God bless you and your listeners and give you his peace and love. In the name of the Father, Son, and Spirit, amen.
Amen. Thank you again, Father Leo Padalinghug, for joining us. And I hope you'll tune in next Saturday at 10:30, Sunday at 4, for another edition of Answering the Call. Have a great week. God bless.
If you know a priest, deacon, or religious sister or brother that might be interested in telling St. Gabriel listeners how God inspired him or her to answer the call, please contact us at info@stgabrielradio.com.